Welcome to Houseplant Homebody. I'm your host, Holly, and I'm here to tell you all about my favorite things, plants. Are you ready? Hello, everyone. Welcome to Propagation Explained. Thank you for waiting. I had an interesting cold, and I have the last few times I've gotten sick where I have this really bad cough and it doesn't go away for way longer than it needs to. So I still have it on and off, but as you can tell, my voice is a lot better. I lost my voice like maybe a week into having the cold, so I couldn't really talk. And every single time I try to talk, I just coughed. So here we are. So obviously this episode is Propagation Explained. So first thing I wanted to do is I looked up the definition of propagation just to see if there's anything fun in there. And it's just the definition, but the Oxford Languages defines it as the breeding of specimens of a plant or animal by natural processes from the parent stock, which break it down obviously makes sense because you are basically breeding another specimen of your original plant, which is the parent stock of your plant, I guess. So we're going to go into the different types of medium right away. I just did a very brief overview on the blog post that I did released on time, but on here, I just want to go into them more. I can warn you right now, I have really only propagated in a few of these, but I do know plant shops and other people that have been successful with all of these. So I really do think it's a personal preference. There are some plants that probably prefer some ways more than others, but we'll kind of get into that. So the medium you could propagate in, it's kind of a mixture, but there's some basic ones. So your usual potting mix, I would say with an emphasis on more soil, is one way of doing it. So typically when I'm potting in soil or propagating in soil, I'm going to be using my Fox Farm potting mix or whatever potting soil that I'm usually using at the time. And I'm still adding some perlite in as well. There are certain plants that grow better in that. I've noticed sometimes Wandering Dude or Inch Plant. Those plants tend to do well in soil, I've noticed. They seem to have a little bit of a more delicate root when I've done it, and it's worked out better. Also, when you are propagating, for example, String of Hearts, or even in the past, I've done Hoya as well, along the top of the soil line, those have done a lot better in the soil mixtures for me. I currently have a Hoya growing in actually a soil moss mixture, which we'll get into. And then I mostly have everything in water. So I have that as the last thing here. So sphagnum peat moss is the next thing I have on the list, or really whatever moss you're using. With sphagnum peat moss is like what you're generally using for plants. Currently, I have a Hoya that I was given. I believe it's, oh, this is going to bother me. Hoya Sunset, maybe? It was on my wish list and someone had it and then they sent me a cutting, which is amazing. And I put that on top of soil with a little bit of peat moss around it. And I had been trying to keep the moss at a higher moisture and watering more frequently. And I had very quick luck with those two things with the moss on top. So that is what I did for that specific thing, because the reason I did it that way is because there was a whole like stem worth of nodes that I could put into the soil to grow roots from. So that's why I did it that way. Okay, the next thing on the list is LECA. The LECA, as I brought up in the Medium Explained episode, stands for Lightweight Expanded Clay Aggregate. I think it's a good rule of thumb that anything that's going to have a almost larger root is going to do better in LECA. And anything that is more finicky is not going to do as well in LECA. So you don't want to be propagating, I mean, who's propagating Calatheas these days? But like Calatheas, Stromanthea, that kind of thing. Any like String of Hearts is not going to do well. I feel like instinctually I can see Pothos, Philodendron, Monstera, anything that is an aeroid type plant is probably going to do the best in LECA. But for example, like the String of Hearts has a really almost fibrous root system. It's not very strong and it's a little bit more fragile, and that's just not going to hold on. It will hold on to like a well. It's just not going to grow as well, I think, because of the moisture needed more consistently with string of hearts is a little bit different than like philodendron, pothos, and that kind of thing. So it's definitely something you can do. It would not be my first choice just because I think it would be a little bit more complicated. For someone that chronically overwaters, maybe this is an option because you're only putting water in the bottom part of it and allowing the LECA to absorb the water when it needs it to feed the root system. But it's, to me, not as easy as soil or water propagation, or like the next one, perlite. So perlite is going to be a very granular mineral. And the point of putting it in soil is obviously aeration and drainage. So with this, you're going to have to be watering a lot more and keeping the moisture up higher than you would in potting soil. That being said, it allows for that aeration and that drainage, so they're getting consistently watered instead of sitting in moisture, and more than likely it's going to have a good rooting to it. I have personally not done perlite, but it is definitely an option, and I do know several people have done that with great luck, great skill as well. But you could also, if you are a little bit skeptical about just using perlite, you could mix it with your potting mix and do more of like a 70% perlite, like 30% soil. So you have a little bit of more of a moisture retention with the soil in it, something like that. Again, this is all super personal preference. So if you want to mess around and figure it out and try it in a couple of ways, that's cool. But perlite is another way to do it. The next one I have is bark or cocoa husk or chips. I am skeptical as to the success of just straight bark with propagation. I would say if you're going to do bark, mix it with a moss or a potting mix or something like that, just because you want to have the moisture retention. Bark does have moisture retention. And a lot of the aeroid type plants like Monstera, pothos, philodendron, they're going to do well because if they're aeroids, normally they're growing up trees and everything already. So it's not to say it's not going to work. I just think that the peat moss perlite potting mix is going to work a little bit better. And I would use just like bark on its own, maybe mixed with something else, maybe not do it on its own. Avoid that. Okay, the last one is what I have the most consistency with and what I actually personally love the most, and that is propagating in water. One, it looks cool. You can see exactly what's going on. You know what the moisture level is because it's a lot of moisture. But it's mostly an aesthetic thing for me, and I've had the most success with it in general. Now, probably with some of the plants that I personally love, like Monstera, philodendron, pothos, that I keep mentioning this whole podcast, those are the ones that I'm propagating the most. Syngonium, I also have done a bunch of times. So I'm trying to think what else I've done. I mean, I've done string of hearts, I've done string of pearls, I've done Monstera, pothos. I'm trying to think around my office what else is in there. No, it's probably just your basics that I've really, really done. I hadn't had a ficus big enough to try that, but I think it's finally big enough. I may actually try my ficus light rata in water next. Hoya, I have done in water, but I've only done it once or twice, and it was rooted a little bit in the past. The other one wasn't, though. That was good. That one I got a whole new plant out of, so that was also nice. Rubber plant, I've done successfully in water. But yeah, I mostly have a lot of different varieties of philodendron Hoya. And my Hoyas are somewhat slower growing, so the opportunity to propagate them has not come up as much as some of my other plants. The other benefits to water is obviously the higher moisture, seeing the roots, and then the airflow and the oxygen to the roots as well. So I find that that is the most satisfying one. And the most successful one were the specific plants that I like to use. The nice thing about my podcast episodes is every plant type that I talk about, I do talk about the best type of propagation or the different ways to propagate that specific plant. I don't necessarily talk about the medium because I do think it's personal preference, but we're going to go into those different types of ways to propagate to kind of help explain it just a little bit better all in one place. I just realized I never gave you a break in the middle of that. Okay, so let's go into the different ways to propagate. A lot of these are very, very dependent on the type of plant, as I just said. So you're not going to be doing, you know, a layering style propagation with some plants. You're only going to be doing stem cuttings, or you're only going to be doing dividing. So those are some of them, but let's just get into them a little bit more. So stem cutting is probably the number one way that usually is happening in houseplants in general. This is where you cut just below a leaf node, and then it starts to form an aerial root just above where you cut. And that is where you're rooting from, and that is where you're going to see the new plants start to produce. You would do a stem cutting with a plant that you are going to visibly see where a leaf node is. If all the way up a stem you don't see any leaf node, then that's not the plant to be stem cutting. For example, peace lily, they don't have leaf nodes at all. So that's not a plant you're going to be stem cutting with. Plants like a philodendron, some varieties, obviously there's some that you're not going to be doing them with, but like pink princess philodendron, perfect example of where you would be doing a stem cutting for. Monstera deliciosa, those have giant roots, that's what you'd be doing it with. You can do them with Hoyas. You can do them with pothos. Obviously, pothos are very successful that way. You do them with string of hearts, string of pearls. I mean, there are a bunch of plants you can do this with. Stem cutting is the most popular way probably that exists out there. Not even most popular, but is probably the number one way to be propagating your houseplants. So super easy. You're just cutting right below the leaf node. I'm going to have pictures posted on the website. I think I only posted one picture so far. I need to upload another one in there that has an actual picture that shows you kind of an arrow pointing to leaf node. And then I'll post it on social media too when I do post about this. I might post about this on Monday, probably when some of you are listening to this anyways. So go check out Instagram, Facebook, because you'll see it there. So stem cutting, probably number one way. The next one is leaf cutting, and I wanted to put this in there because there is a slight difference between the stem cutting and leaf cutting. And the difference is you're not cutting below a leaf node, you're cutting just below a leaf. So something like a ZZ plant you're going to be doing this with, or an African violet even. And I would consider a snake plant also in this kind of situation, although you're not cutting below it, you're cutting the leaf. So a ZZ plant, for example, you'll be cutting just below the leaf sometimes, and from there it can root. Or an African violet, same thing. If you cut just below the leaf and just leave a teeny bit of the stem up, it will root from there pretty easily. So those are a couple examples. Snake plant, the whole plant, a whole leaf is what you're cutting. You can cut it into pieces. You can cut just one piece and it will start rooting. Snake plant, I've had success with and I've had failure with in soil and in water. So that is a hit or miss kind of situation. Maybe more drainage is needed or not. I'm not quite sure. Also, something like a snake plant could need to callus over like a succulent would, for example. So that's a whole nother thing that I'm not going to get too deeply into because I go into that in the actual plant episodes when needed. But you're not going to hear that because I cut that out. But I think talking so much is making me cough again. Okay, leaf cuttings. I don't know where I ended. Okay, anyways, a leaf cutting. You're cutting just below a leaf. It's super simple. Totally dependent on the type of plant, though. You're not going to be able to do this with every type of plant. So follow the instructions on the blog posts and the podcast episodes that I've shared with you in the past, but that is an option for some of them. The next one is division. This is also very plant specific, and you're definitely not going to be doing this with a ton of plants, but you are going to be doing it with some. So the example I keep bringing up as an example of what not to do, this one is the perfect one to do division, and that is peace lily. So if you've ever divided something in your own landscape or made two of something like a hosta or an iris or anything like that. You basically just took the shovel and chopped it down the middle. That's what you're going to be doing with these types of plants. Because you got to wait till they're a little bit more mature, sometimes you're not going to be able to divide your plants as quick as you might be able to do a stem cutting with. As long as you have like a couple of leaf nodes for stem cutting, you can do it. But for division, if you have a tiny little plant, you're not going to be dividing the tiny little plant into two teeny tiny little plants. So you got to wait till it's a little bit more mature. There are actually more plants than you think that would be doing division. An asparagus fern, you can definitely divide it because it has like a chunkier, fibrous root system that grows very large and not off of one central thing. ZZ plant, you could actually do. Cast iron plant is another one. And some ferns, so like Boston fern, because, you know, in ferns in your own yard, you can do it too. There are some palms you can do it to, like fishtail palm, which is a very popular palm. You can do it out there. Even Pilea peperomiides, or however you pronounce that second one, the second word, that might even be something that you're going to be able to, I guess, separate technically. It's a little bit, it's kind of like a stem cutting, but that's also a division. So it's really any plant that you don't have one central spot where the plant is growing. You have multiple points where it is growing from. It's probably the best way to remember it. That's probably not the end all be all of the rules of that. So like snake plant is also something that not only could you do the leaf cutting, you can also do division with, same as easy. So division, you're just chopping it down the middle. I would suggest, I've just ripped my plants apart before, because I've done that with asparagus fern a couple times in my lifetime. If you are a little bit worried about that, you can just get a knife and do a really clean cut down the middle or into fours if it's big enough or whatever you want to do. But that's probably the best way to do that. Okay, the next one is layering. And this is the way I did mine in the soil with the moss on the top. You're basically just burying the leaf nodes in the soil. So anything with the leaf node, anything you could do a stem cutting with, more than likely you can do layering with. The other side of layering is air layering, which is also something that has always been around, but it's been more prominent and popular in recent years. Both the same process where you're burying a leaf node in soil and moss in something and trying to get a root from that. The difference between just plain layering and air layering is air layering, you are attaching soil, moss, anything into like a little ball onto a stem that's connected to its parent plant, and you're not cutting the stem off at all. You're just leaving the moss and soil around the leaf node area to grow the root system before you cut the stem off into a second plant. Actual layering, you could leave it attached to its parent plant. You don't need to separate it, but more likely than not, you're getting a stem cutting already, and then you're going to be laying that in the soil line. So that is layering and air layering. For air layering, I wanted to note that there are bulbs that already exist, which are actually really handy, that you can put soil or moss into, and you can just kind of clip it around your plant. And I did post a link on Amazon on the blog post. It's called air layering bulbs in the extra tools to help you propagate section of the blog post. Super helpful. Otherwise, if you don't want the fancy bulb, you can use like saran wrap or a plastic baggie and just wrap it around that way and hold it together with twine or something on either end. And you're just going to want to make sure the moisture stays up. More than likely with the plastic wrap around it, you're not really going to have a big problem with moisture staying in there because it's kind of making its own little humidifier in that ball. And those are the basic different ways to propagate. I hope you learned a little bit. The layering is always the interesting one that like it kind of ties in with stem cutting, but it is a little bit different in the way it operates. So I'm just going to go briefly through some of the extra tools that I have linked on the blog post. And then we had a couple of questions for the Instagram Q&A. All right. So some of the tools that you're going to obviously need are pruners, or I put compact shears. Dram is the brand that I always like to use. They have the tiny little compact shears that are really sharp. So be careful if you put them in pockets, they will cause holes. But I love those. I linked that. I also put the humidifier on. Sometimes when you're propagating, you're going to want to increase the humidity depending on the plant. Some environments already have humidifiers nearby, so you could put your propagation near that and it goes well. I have also had great luck with propagating with very little extra humidity added. So I think it's very, very dependent on the plant that you are doing. I also have my panel grow lights that I have attached to all of my plant shelves in my office, just in case you need more light to help propagate. I don't think it's necessary to be putting these in super, super bright light at all. Obviously, depending on the plant, but more than likely, medium light is fine. Bright indirect light, sure, but medium light's usually okay with propagations. I also have a rooting powder. I've never used it, but it was sold a lot at the garden center I worked with. Bonide, in general, Bonide is a brand that I've normally used for outdoor plants, but they do have some indoor stuff, like the indoor systemic insecticide is what I like to use from Bonide, but Bonide also has a rooting powder. This basically speeds up the rooting process and helps kind of accelerate that more than just your general watering. Because normally when you're rooting plants, you're not going to be wanting to really add a ton of fertilizer, especially water propagating. You're not going to be wanting to fertilize at all in that, because it's actually just going to mucky up the water more than it already is. So that's a good way to accelerate the growth without having to use fertilizer in this kind of situations. And then obviously air layering bulbs, as I just discussed a second ago. And then I also have mini mason jars in a mini tabletop greenhouse. I have like a glass dome for extra humidity, and I have some cute propagation station stuff. I also have this really cute decorative mushroom propagation set from Amazon that's actually adorable, and it's very trendy right now. So anyways, I had some cute decoration stuff on there, but those are the practical things that I wanted to list off to make sure you knew they were available, kind of just a quick tap of the link. I'm going to be putting these in my stories this week. I know I normally talk about this, but these links are Amazon affiliate links. I just wanted to call that out. Obviously, I'm not expecting a ton from this side of things, but I did want to provide the information, knowing that you may be clicking on the links and maybe purchasing through my links. So I appreciate any support in that route if you decide to go through those links. Okay, let's move on to the Instagram Q&A. Okay, so as a reminder, Instagram Q&A, I normally ask you, in the past I've asked for your questions about the topic, but I have been wanting questions, opinions, and hot takes because I want to get some controversy and I want to know what you guys like and dislike and have opinions about, and I want to talk about it on the podcast. So we got a hot take slash opinion and we got one question, so that's great. So the first question was, what is the best device to propagate in and why? And I quite truthfully think this is personal preference, and it's very much dependent on the plant, and it's dependent on how you're propagating, which, what a lovely answer. That's not very helpful. As I've said, my favorite way is to propagate in water because of the fun clear jars, and then I get to see the root system creating itself, sort of. I like to see the evolution of growth. But there are some people that use the plastic cup you get from Starbucks with the soil and moss in it. And then there are some people that buy a whole fancy tray with heat, humidity, light, and everything to propagate. That's fine too. It's not that complicated. And I don't think you need to complicate it too much. Use what you have. If you have an extra terracotta pot and you want to propagate a Monstera, you can just put the potting mix in it that you have and the Monstera's leaf node in it and keep the moisture high. And you could root your plant that way. If you have a takeout container, a plastic takeout container from, you know, getting sushi or something, and you want to try layering your string of hearts, well, lay that baby down in the plastic takeout container, put the lid on it, and acts as extra humidifier. So I don't think there's any best device to propagate in, honestly. I think it's very much personal preference. It's very much the type of propagating you're doing and the medium you're using. So best of luck to you. If you need support, you know where I am. Okay. The next kind of question, hot take, was water propagation is hit or miss. I found soil prop works better. So this is great. And this is why I love these Instagram Q&As, because water propagation is a hit for me. So the fact that it's hit or miss for someone else, I don't know why. It might be dependent on the environment. It might be the plants they're propagating. They didn't mention that at all. It could be a slew of different things. It could be that it's a very small container that you're propagating in, not enough oxygen, not enough water in there. So it's super, super dependent on the situation and the type of plant you're using. So that's great. Soil propagation I have had good luck with too. It's just my problem is I'm a chronic underwaterer, so putting them directly in water is probably the best thing and why it works so well for me. Also, I barely replace the water. I probably replace it, I would say, every couple months. It's probably not the best for it, but I'm replacing it every couple months and I'm just kind of refilling it in between then. So that is great that soil works better, and I think increasing the moisture for soil is obviously the best way to get that root cutting properly done. And obviously you can do layering and stuff with soil propagation. So there's a lot of different plants and different ways to do it with that. So that's great. So that was the Instagram Q&A. I hope you guys enjoyed the Propagation Explained podcast. I appreciate your patience while I try to recover to be able to record correctly. I only had a couple coughing fits, so that's great. And I'll keep healing over time. But I hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and I'll see you in just about a week with another one. So have a good week. Bye. Obviously, you know I'm back because I have more information to share with you. But I wanted to thank you for your patience again with me. I got very, very sweet messages saying, don't worry about it. Just heal yourself. We'll listen when it comes out. So I very much appreciate it. I'm glad I got the blog post out so you guys had a little bit of content while I was recovering. So that's great. A couple things that I want to talk about. I got to go back to my notes here. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. As a reminder, and if you don't know this already, then I don't know. You haven't been listening, obviously, too consistently. But I went back to releasing the podcast biweekly. Just because I missed all of you, I missed the conversations, I missed talking about plants. So that's why we are here. I will be including more topical episodes, kind of like the propagation medium explained situations. And then I also will be talking about landscape plants again. It is where my love for plants was born. So I would like to dive back into it. And I hope you guys enjoy it as well. It's still a lot of lessons learned in landscape that are similar to houseplants, and then you might learn a little bit. I'm in zone, hardiness zone 5. So more than likely, I will be covering plants that are hardy in zone 5 or around zone 5. So a lot of the United States is going to be covered with what I'm talking about. Either way, I'm talking about landscape plants, and I am hardiness zone 5. So we're going to probably go into some of the plants based on the season and that's happening, so that way you can get a good interesting plant that's blooming or coming up to bloom quickly. So just for example, I will be doing, well, I put this information in the last newsletter in February, so I'll share with you a little bit of a tidbit here. But coming up in April, I'll be doing forsythia, which is a type of shrub. And then before that, in the middle of March, I'll be doing spring blooming bulbs, which really doesn't help you at all because you're going to be planting them in fall. But I want to talk about what they are because you're going to see the them blooming right away. So I just want to throw that out there. But to go over what's happening realistically next week, because I've been a week behind. Next week is, well, is it next week? The following week, starting March 5th, is my birthday week. So I turned 30 years old on March 4th, along with obviously my twin sister. And I decided that I'm going to release an episode on March 5th, which obviously is the Tuesday that normally releases podcast episodes, but I'm going to release an episode called Holly's Houseplants Birthday Edition. So this is just going to be a conversational topic, more or less talking about what my collection looks like now, how it's changed, what I'm focused on, what's been successful for me over the last few years, what hasn't been, what I've given up on, that kind of thing. I did a similar episode for the supporters a couple years ago. So this is just going to be similar to that. I figured with my birthday, that would be a fun thing to do. I'm not a birthday girl by any means, but I am a big birthday girl. So if it's a like 21st birthday, 30, and then I kind of do like 40, 50, and then like 55, 60, 65, 70, you know, like that's my birthday kind of thing. So for 30, it's a big deal. I will not actually probably really celebrate crazily again until I'm 40. So that's why it's a bigger deal for me. Because it's a bigger deal for me, it's going to be a bigger deal on House My Homebody. So that is why I'm going to do the episode. But I'm also going to do a birthday giveaway, which I've done, I think the last few years I've done a birthday giveaway. And that is going to be logo merch. I actually have some more merch coming out. If you listen to the end of the episode, you get all the details, and this is why you should do this. But I had a very good conversation with Peter about House My Homebody this weekend, and I was on a roll working through things, and I had been wanting to get more merch done, and I just hadn't pulled the plug because it's a lot of overhead costs, an initial cost for me at least. So I knew what I wanted to do. I had it saved up for a while, and I was just waiting to decide what to do. And then I just, you know what? I just decided to do it. So more is coming, but some of a logo merchandise piece will be coming as a giveaway. So watch out for that. It's going to be the week of March 5th. You're going to see that stuff start to pop up, and probably the giveaway stuff happening starting on the weekend, because my birthday is on a Monday. So stay tuned for that. And I think that's all I have this time around. Just remember, the newsletter is quarterly still. It didn't change. So the next newsletter comes out in May. So if you haven't signed up, you should. That is going to be more of the summer-driven houseplant type newsletter. So you're going to be looking at kind of options for when you move your houseplants out, what you should be doing, thinking about what to do as you're transitioning your houseplants, what inside your house might start to be changing. Honestly, if things aren't changing already, I'm surprised. Most of the time, houseplants are growing quite consistently for me. By the end of February, I'm starting to consistently use fertilizer again. And then I kind of stop in October. It's a wide, wide range of dates. Okay, that's all I have. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And I will see you in about a week, and I'll see you on social media. Bye-bye.